Welcome to the Kindle Chronicles, a Friday podcast all about the Kindle. My name is Len Edgerly, and this is episode 45 on Friday, May 29, 2009. Back in downtown Denver after our great visit to Oahu last week. Out the window from my study, I can see thunderheads forming out over the Rockies, but on the 16th Street Mall, the trees are all leafed out, and it's a brilliant mile-high day. My guest for this week's interview is co-editor of Telearead.org. That's a site that's been following ebooks since 1992, way before the Kindle was a spark in Jeff Bezos's eye. Paul Biba has a great perspective on the unfolding adventure of ebooks, and he'll open your eyes to some platforms beyond the Kindle itself. Kindle News this week will point you to a nationwide caffeinated Kindle meetup, a cranky ode to the Kindle that appeared in the New York Times, an ebook that's an e-ink milestone, and lithium-ion battery tips. In the tech tip, I'm going to walk you through a brand new Amazon feature that was announced this week that enables you to go online to see all of your Kindle highlights and notes. The Kindle quote will be a lively bit from Fortune magazine. And you can subscribe to this podcast at the iTunes or Zune stores or by going to the show notes page at thekindlechronicles.com. With that, let's turn to this week's Kindle news. In Kindle News this week, there's a National Kindle and Coffee Day, that's coffee with a K, that is getting some notice. I'm reading about it here at the Kindleboards.com blog, which has got a nice new makeover. It's really, they've redesigned the interface there, and it looks pretty sharp. So they're talking about June 6th at 10 a.m. local time. And they're saying, Kindle owners, get ready for the first National Kindle Meetup on Saturday, June 6th. Kindle owners are invited to congregate at their local Starbucks. The meeting will be at 10 a.m. local time. Bring your Kindles and accessories and enjoy some Kindle conversation with your coffee. So this sounds like a lot of fun. I think I will be at the Starbucks, which is at 16th Street and Blake Street at 10 a.m. Denver time. So if anybody's in the area wants to stop by, I'll be there, and they say this is a chance for people who don't own a Kindle but would like to see one to come and talk to owners about it. So that sounds good. And credit goes to Kathy from Amazon's Kindle forums for getting this going, and then Kindle Boards has been giving it a boost. Another item which I saw a lot on Twitter and all over the internet this week was an article in the New York Times by Charles McGrath, and he is a former editor of the New York Times Book Review and also of the New Yorker. So he's kind of a lion in the literary world. And he wrote an article, By the Book, Reader Meets the Kindle. I heard about this first from Dan Montepulciano. It's kind of a cranky ode, but it shows somebody who really has taken to the Kindle. He claims it's not really the future because it's got so many limitations. But here's an interesting bit that's part of his article. One of the odder sensations of reading on the Kindle, though, is a sensation of eternal presentness. Your books are all there, perfectly preserved. The device even remembers exactly what page you were on last. On the other hand, as you read along, there are very few cues to how near you are to the beginning, how far from the end. You're always in the middle. He talks about the difficulty of finding your way around. I mean, it's an example of somebody writing about the Kindle that probably hasn't used it very long, but it was kind of a significant bit of play. His ending, I thought, was worth repeating. The screen is small, though not as small as the iPhones, on which you can also read books. And if you're a fast reader, the wait while the tiny black particles realign themselves on the screen after you turn the page is annoying. Yet, in many ways, the Kindle experience is reading reduced to its essence, deciphering marks on a slate. To say you appreciate written language more when it's transmitted this way, without the familiar delivery mechanism of paper, print, and binding, would be a stretch, but after a while, you don't appreciate it any less. Another item that showed up was a milestone of sorts for E-Ink, which is the Cambridge, Massachusetts company which makes the screen for the Kindle and also the Sony Reader and lots of other ebook devices. They were reporting in a release that I saw on Telereed that they have marked there are over 1 million ebook readers now reading on the e-ink display. And so that's quite an accomplishment. They list the Cybook Gen 3, Digital Reader by iRex, eSlick by Foxit. There's just a whole list of these. Most of them I've never heard about, but it's a tribute to how the screen itself has so radically driven this resurgence of ebooks. Last item is something I found on, I think a listener forwarded this to me. I apologize, my notes don't show here who sent this to me, but in response to some comments I made about battery life, this is from a site called batteryuniversity.com, How to Prolong Lithium-Based Batteries. And there's all sorts of impressive graphs that show the number of cycles and a lot of real analysis of batteries. But then toward the end, there's this list of simple guidelines. Avoid frequent full discharges because this puts additional strain on the battery. Several partial discharges with frequent recharges are better for lithium ion than one deep one. Recharging a partially charged lithium ion does not cause harm because there is no memory. In this respect, lithium ion differs from nickel-based batteries. Short battery life in a laptop is mainly caused by heat rather than charge-discharge patterns. Keep the lithium ion battery cool. Avoid a hot car for prolonged storage. Keep the battery at a 40% charge. And avoid... let's see, that doesn't really relate. The rest of it's about spare batteries, but we don't have those in the Kindle. So the main thing is, I guess, this business of discharging it and then recharging it, according to batteryuniversity.com, is not the way to go on battery life. Those are the items for this week's Kindle News. Tech tip this week is a new feature that Amazon announced. The word of it sort of leaked out in dribs and drabs, but now I just today received an email, but I'd actually heard about it earlier in the week on the internet. It's a pretty simple procedure. If you haven't heard about it yet, on a browser on your computer, any computer, if you type in as a URL kindle.amazon.com, you'll be taken to a place where you sign on with your regular Amazon account, your username and password. And once you've done that, you come to a very simple page that's simply identified your reading list. And it will show on the left column the titles of everything that you've purchased through the Kindle store that resides on your Kindle, and also things which are not physically on your Kindle now but are in the archives that you've moved them off to the Kindle back into the cloud. And you can see the author of the item that you had. If you've done any ratings, they will show up. And also you get to see average customer review. But the exciting thing is in the far right column, there will be a pencil icon if you've made any notes in the particular item. And if you click on that icon, you'll see the notes that you wrote at a particular point in the book. And it will show you the location of the note that you wrote. And if it's a highlight, that's another icon that shows up. It will show you the text that you selected and made as a highlight. Now, there are some drawbacks to this because you can only see, it looks like on this screen I'm looking at on my MacBook Air, I'm looking at 5 entries on a particular book. It would be handier to be able to see everything that I had marked in a single book if I was working on a book review or I wanted to see this. As it is, I have to go through next page if I've got numerous things on a book and see them there. Copy and paste, you can print out the page. It certainly gives me faster access to this information than I had otherwise. Now, I've seen some pushback on this in Twitter and different places, people saying this is more information than they'd like Amazon to be making available on the web, security concerns. I can understand those kind of concerns, but as for myself, I basically think this is a great advance, and I hope it gets improved so that it's even handier in terms of being able to see all of the notes or highlights at once. So if you haven't tried that out, I recommend it. It's also a good reason to start using the highlighting and the notes function on your Kindle. They work on the Kindle 1 and the Kindle 2, but in the Kindle 2, it's highly improved in terms of your ability to highlight across pages. And also, it's just a little easier to get a note going and to use notes on your Kindle. Paul Biba is co-editor of Telluride.org, and that's a site, a blog that's been following ebooks since 1992. David Rothman owns the site, and Paul, in the interview, will explain how he came to be the co-editor of it recently. So Paul, for 40 years, was a corporate lawyer with a specialty in international transactions, and I reached him yesterday at his home in Bernardsville, New Jersey. We'll pick the interview up where he explains how he got started as an ebook reader.
Being a corporate lawyer, I've spent I don't know how many million miles in the air, and back in the 70s, I'd leave to go on a three-week trip, and I had to take too many books with me, so I started reading ebooks on palms, just to save the luggage.
Did you have a rocket book?
No, I never did have a rocket book, but I read mostly on started on a Palm Pilot, and then moved to a Palm 3, and from there on to Windows Mobile, et cetera, et cetera.
Then what, in the more recent generation, which was your first ebook purchase?
I started with the Sony 500, and then got a 505 when it came out, and proceeded to drop the 505 and smash it.
No.
And so, yes, unfortunately. So at that time, the Kindle One had come out, and I decided, okay, I know what Sony's all about. Let's get a Kindle. So I got a Kindle One and then moved up to the Kindle Two.
How soon after the introduction did you get your Kindle One?
Pretty soon after that, because I don't know whether it was Freudian or not, but I smashed the Sony pretty soon after the Kindle.
It must have been destiny or something.
And, I guess.
How about, do you plan to buy the Kindle DX?
No. The Kindle 2 is big enough, and I don't know what I would carry, how I would carry a DX around.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking.
To me, it seems like a pretty special-purpose device. I can't imagine the average person like me wanting such a thing.
Yeah. So in your ebook reading now, is it all on the Kindle 2, or do you sometimes use the Sony as well?
Well, no, I use either the Kindle 2, or I'm finding, actually, once Kindle came out with the iPhone application, that I'm using the iPhone application even more than the Kindle 2.
I'll be darned. And you don't find the small screen or the backlit a problem just for long reads?
Well, I guess, I started on a small screen.
Right.
So it never really... So I'm used to that. And my God, I even read using e-reader. I even used to read books on a flip phone.
You're hardcore.
So maybe I'm nuts, but the thing, especially now since they came out with the upgrade, I really like the light brown background they have now with the darker brown text.
It's yeah, I think that's the, really the sepia they call it. It's really
sepia.
Yeah, it's very easy to read.
And since I have the iPhone with me, I don't use a home phone anymore. Since I have the iPhone with me 100% of the time, it means my books are with me 100% of the time.
Yeah.
I don't have to remember to get my Kindle. So if I'm sitting down in my chair, I guess I usually pick up the Kindle too then. But today I went to the coffee shop and for lunch, and I had the iPhone with me, so I read on that.
Yeah. Now, you said in your email that you're interested in how Kindle is changing the paradigm of e-readers by using the wireless capability of WhisperNet and the iPhone app. What have you got in mind with that?
If you look at the e-readers that are out now, I mean, you've got the Kindle, you've got the Sony, you've got the SciBook, you've got several others, and I've seen most of those at trade. I've either owned them or I've seen most of those at trade shows, and they're really all the same.
Mm-hmm.
They all use the same screen, the same technology. So, to be honest, if you're reading a book, it doesn't make any difference whether you're reading it on a Kindle or a Sony reader or a SciBook. None of them bring anything new to that experience.
Mm-hmm.
What changes the whole thing is the Kindle's use of wireless, which just makes, I mean, I've bought more books since I've owned the Kindle than I have in a long time before that. And the other thing that I think people don't glom onto enough is that a lot of consumers don't like computers. They don't want to hook their stupid Sony or their stupid Kindle up to a computer with a USB cable. They don't even know how to do that. and this you don't need a computer with. This is the change of the paradigm. This is standalone. It's either on your phone, you don't need a computer with that, you don't need a computer with the Kindle, and you can give it to your grandma and she'll be able to buy a book.
Do you think that the convenience of the wireless is why you have bought so many more books on the Kindle than you did before, or is there another aspect of the Kindle that's leading you to actually consume more books?
No, I think it's basically just the convenience.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the other day I was in a restaurant and I was having lunch with someone and he was talking about a Tony Hillerman book I'd never read, and while we were there, I fired up the Kindle and I bought the book.
Exactly. Sometimes I wonder if I'm...
That's what does it.
Sometimes I'm afraid I buy books that way just to impress my friends.
There's a problem. Yes, there's a problem with that. I'm really curious to see what happens when Sony comes out with its wireless reader.
Well, I'm surprised it's taken so long. Do you have any insight as to if they're about to or why it's taken so long?
Well, I was lucky enough to get invited to the press briefing where they released the 505.
Mm-hmm.
And the VP, whose name unfortunately I've forgotten, who's in charge of the entire Sony ebook operation, made no bones about the fact that they were coming out with a wireless reader. He said it would be done.
When was that?
He said that was, well, when was the 505 introduced? I guess that was a year and a half ago, probably.
Wow. Hmm.
And he said the problem that they are having is they don't want to do an Amazon model. He said that they want to make the wireless reader, they want to make everything accessible through the wireless reader. Any source of books should be accessible through the reader. So he didn't explain what that meant, but he just said that was causing them a lot of difficulty.
Hmm. That it might be more difficult to arrange for a wireless connection if they intended to have it carry that much content?
It's possible. It might be the cost of the connection. It might be the software that they have to develop to put onto the machine.
I see.
To get all that content.
Hmm.
I was at the IDPF conference a couple weeks ago. The director of one of the Sony directors of the project was there, and he said they're still working on wireless, and said there will be one.
Wow. Probably
so
Amazon.
We'll see.
Amazon probably hopes they keep trying to perfect it.
I think so, yeah.
Hmm.
And of course, the new plastic Logic machine,
mm-hmm.
which will be out next year. I've seen that, and that's a nice machine.
Yeah, it looks like it.
That will have wireless.
Is that going to have Wi-Fi and something like WhisperNet, or what's the wireless going to
yes.
look like on the plastic Logic?
Yeah, it should have both.
I see.
The neat thing about the plastic Logic machine is that. They found a way to bind the display directly to the machine itself rather than having a glass backing,
mm-hmm.
which is how the display is bound now. And you can literally drop that machine, you can step on it, and it'll be okay.
Wow.
And that's exciting. No more smashed Sony 505s with that thing.
And is that going to have the ability to read PDFs natively?
I believe it will. Mm-hmm. I believe it will. And it will read EPUB.
Mm-hmm. Now, and that leads me to ask what I know you consider to be the main drawback of the Kindle as an e-reader, which is the limited number of formats available.
Yeah, and that's something that bothers me and bothers, I think, a lot of people who've been involved in this for a long time. Look at what happened in December of last year when FictionWise and Overdrive got into a dispute. And Overdrive pulled its DRM service from FictionWise. Everybody who owned books, DRM books on FictionWise, lost their books.
Wow.
FictionWise was very a real good corporate citizen, and they were able to get alternate books for about 95 to 98% of those books. Mm. But people lost the books. They're gone. Mm. If look at what happened last year when Moby Pocket's DRM servers went down. People lost access to their books. Mm-hmm. That means that Amazon has you in a headlock. Mm-hmm. And if they decide the business isn't going well or whatever, you are not buying any book from Amazon. You're simply renting them. And I guess that's all right if you know what you're doing, but the average consumer, I don't think, does. Mm-hmm. And I think it's very misleading to the consumer. I'm hoping the FTC, you know, makes some sort of disclosure requirement mandatory.
You are not buying this book.
Yes, exactly right. But it's true. I mean,
yeah.
I think most people who buy a book from have no idea that that server could be Amazon could turn off the server and they've lost their book. I don't, and that I find that's one of the major, if not the major problem. Not only with Amazon, Sony has the same problem. The Sony format is proprietary too. However, Sony at least lets you read EPUB on their machine, which Amazon won't.
Well, why doesn't Amazon let the EPUB on the machine?
Nobody knows. Amazon refuses to discuss the issue. We've tried to talk to them. Other people have tried to talk to them. Amazon refuses to discuss the issue. So we just don't know. Hmm. And, of course, the odd thing is Amazon now owns Moby Pocket. Mm-hmm. Does that mean at some point or another they may get rid of Moby Pocket? Because Moby Pocket, is a competitor. Mm-hmm. Don't need a Kindle to read Moby Pocket. Mm-hmm. So a lot of questions about this whole industry right now. All that being said, it's an exciting time.
Yeah, that's for sure. You wrote about Amazon's purchase of LexCycle, which is about a month ago, and you had some concerns about would the management really end up staying, and it sounded like you knew some of those folks. In the past month, has anything happened in the last month that's made you either more or less concerned about what the future of LexCycle might be, the maker of Stanza?
No, neither here nor there. I know the people. I've met them several times. I saw them just last week, I guess, 2 weeks ago at the IDPF conference in New York. It's just, I've been a corporate lawyer for 40 years. I know what happens in takeovers. Maybe nothing will happen, and I wish them well, and I hope nothing does happen. Mm-hmm. But my experience has been over the years that the management that's taken over very, very seldom, I could count them on the fingers of one hand, stays with the company.
Yeah, and the intention or the statements are always otherwise.
Exactly right. And I have no, I have to stress, I have no inside information. Mm-hmm. This is just purely my speculation based on my experience. Oh, by the way, yeah. Before I forget, I put up on Telluride this afternoon, late this afternoon, an absolutely fascinating article by on Fortune magazine, from Fortune, CNN Fortune, uh-huh. On the Kindle. If you haven't seen it,
oh no, I haven't seen it.
I suggest you go over there and take a look.
Okay, yeah,
it's silly, and to get the link, it's just a great article.
Okay.
A lot of inside personal info, which was interesting too.
Wow, that's cool. Well, I was really interested to see what you put up earlier today about that new ability to find highlights and notes on the Amazon site, and I tried it. It works pretty great.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, this is exciting. Not even so much just for that, but for the fact that Amazon's thinking. I mean, they're really just not making a reader here. They're making something else, and we're not sure what it's going to turn into, and that's exciting.
Tell me a little bit more about Telereed, the blog that you're, and you've kind of taken over responsibility of it fairly recently, but what's the, especially for Kindle users who are the main listeners to the podcast, what might they find there at Telereed that would be of interest?
Well, I think anybody who's interested in e-books should be interested in Telereed. We've been around since 1992.
Wow.
I took it over, or sort of took it over involuntarily, when David Rothman, who owns the site, had a heart attack last year. And I, being a bit of a techie, I jumped in and kept the site running while he was recuperating.
Mm-hmm.
And since then have become the co-editor. And we are the for anybody who's interested in the Kindle or e-books, we're the biggest, I don't know what you want to say it, consolidator on the web.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I go through about 2,000 RSS feeds a day trying to pull out e-book news and put it up. Anything from libraries to Kindle. Today we had 2 Kindle articles.
Yes.
Some days we have none. We also have a stable of writers who've been writing with us. Stephen Windwalker is a regular contributor.
Yes.
To the site.
Yeah.
And we also have a number of others. Luckily, a lot of the book events tend to be in New York, and I'm based here, so I'll be spending 4 days at Book Expo America trying to cover what's going on from ebooks or interest in books in general. I think there's going to be a Kindle presentation there, and
mm-hmm.
I'll try and cover that from the floor.
That'd be great.
And so I think that's what, you know, come over and take a look. You'll find something new every day. David and I completely disagree about the Kindle. David is very, very much afraid that Amazon is intent in monopolizing ebooks, and is very leery of Amazon. I take just the opposite view. So we have some, that doesn't prevent us, though, from being friends and arguing with each other publicly, which is nice, sometimes fun.
So your counter view to his worry about Amazon is basically that the whole digital rights management will sort itself out and not to...
Well, the fact that, look, ebooks are still 1% of book sales. We don't even know what the market's going to be like yet. This market has just really taken off in the last year and a half
mm-hmm.
to 2 years. So this is not a zero-sum game. When the market is so fluid and so open, we could have somebody new come in and knock Amazon out of the block, and we just don't know. So I'm much more sanguine that this is going to be a fun time and nobody's going to lock up the ebook market yet. And David's much more worried about that than I am. But I think we're going to see a lot of new stuff coming down the pike. I have never seen anything take off quite as quickly as ebooks right now. I don't understand what's driving it, to tell you the truth. But I think a lot of it is the iPhone, to tell you the truth.
Hmm.
As much as it is Amazon, I think that Amazon got the publicity out. iPhone got the publicity out. The ebook applications for the iPhone are some of the biggest downloads from Apple.
Right.
It's just more than Amazon. Sony's getting the publicity out.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just great. No more reading on my flip cell phone.
It's too bad you're not doing all of that business travel anymore. You'd have so many options on what to take with you.
That's true. It's true.
I really enjoyed visiting with Paul and want to thank him for the time to do the interview. And check out telereed.org. It's an ebook blog that doesn't, it's not just limited to the Kindle, but you'll find some good Kindle news there as well as broader news of what's going on in the ebook industry. And as he says, he just handles a lot of content, and so it's a real good place to keep your pulse on the ebook sector. Paul Biba recommended an article in Fortune, which I whisper-netted to my Kindle for 15 cents via Instapaper. It's titled Amazon's Next Revolution by Senior Editor Jeffrey O'Brien, appearing on May 26th at money.cnn.com, which is a site that Fortune is also involved in. Here's an excerpt from that article. Most company watchers think that Bezos is positioned to make a fortune on the device. Barclays Capital predicts Kindle devices will produce $840 million in profit on $3.7 billion in sales in 2012. That's roughly 20% of Amazon's total sales and profit today. A recent Citigroup report pegged total Kindle sales at roughly 500,000 units. Such numbers don't exactly translate to a white earbud phenomenon. Apple, AAPL, Fortune 500, has shipped more than 200 million iPods. But anecdotal evidence shows that Kindle has infiltrated one circle in particular. Next time you fly or just pass through business class, notice how many professional travelers have Kindles. And if you're carrying one, prepare to answer questions. How do you like it? Is it worth it? They're not gadget people, Bezos says of the early adopters. I think of a gadget as something that you buy, play with a while, and stick in a desk drawer. No one calls their microwave oven a gadget. It's too useful. That's this week's Kindle quote from Amazon's Next Revolution by Jeffrey O'Brien in Fortune. Time now for your comments. In response to the Kindled Spirits alert that I sent out on Amazon's new highlighting notes service, Verinder Sayal wrote, "Thank you also for this most amazing find on highlighting. I checked it out and it works as advertised. One issue I want to share with you on which perhaps you can shed some light," he continues. "I love the highlighting feature. I use it a lot, especially on certain books that I may use for a class I teach as an adjunct in Chicago. For example, I made copious notes on a Peter Drucker book, clipped the highlights on my Mac, and then used those notes to summarize the book for my edification. Now I can just look at the website. I tried the same thing on another book by another author, and after some time, the system told me that I could not clip anymore. On calling the Kindle desk, they told me that each author puts their own limits. There is no workaround. Is this the case? If this is the case, and authors are within their rights to do so, I wish any such limits would be known in advance. Your thoughts would be welcome." Well, this is the first time I've heard of this. At least I think it's the first time I remember hearing about it. And I'd be curious if anyone else has run into this, where you're trying to highlight in a book and you run up against a limit that somehow the author has been able to set. And I don't know about the logistics of being, you know, saying on each book what the limit is going to be, but it is kind of a pain in the neck if there isn't a reasonable amount of highlighting that's available on the part of the author. April also wrote about the new highlighting notes feature. She said, "I love it. I had stopped using the highlighting in notes because there was no easy way to print them. The only thing I don't like is that there is not a print all comments highlights option. This would make it very easy to print a list to discuss at book club. Right now you would have to print each screen, but that's a big improvement. I think this is a great first stab at solving the issue." That's from April and from her BlackBerry. Cindy Brooks reminded me that she also has had trouble with the Kindle screen in direct sunlight, and that I read her account of the problem way back on episode 34. So the comment from John Halkias was not the first time that I'd heard about this problem. So my apologies to Cindy for not remembering that she had raised this issue first. She continues in a comment, "By email, at the time of my comment, I was waiting for my replacement Kindle to arrive after contacting Amazon customer service about the problem. I was sent a replacement by Amazon for that first defective Kindle, but sadly it was not my last one. I ended up with three Kindles that faded in the sun, and I've included photos so you can see this is no small issue. And one with a defective volume switch. My current Kindle is working well, and I have to give Amazon customer service another compliment for the way they handled a very frustrating experience for me. I actually sent photos that I've sent you along to Kindle Feedback so they could see the issue, and got a very nice call back after my latest replacement to make sure that it was working properly and that I was satisfied. I'm hoping this was an isolated incident, perhaps a manufacturing issue with a certain batch of Kindles, but Amazon has been very good about replacing the units for those of us who received them. The first thing I did when I received my current Kindle was take it out into direct sunlight and flip through several pages of text. There was absolutely no fading whatsoever, so it is definitely not a characteristic of all Kindle 2s. Being able to read outdoors in bright light is one of the best things about the Kindle, in my opinion, so it was worth the trouble to get a unit that worked properly. Thanks, Cindy Brooks. Cindy did include photos of the one of the impaired units, and there's an obvious problem. I mean, the text just kind of blotches out, and you can't read it, and it's clearly whatever was causing the problem, the sunlight on the screen, was something that just had to be fixed, and I'm glad that Amazon jumped on it as quickly as they did. Yisrael Parker chimed in on this issue, saying that he'd seen comments in several forums regarding Kindle e-ink fading in direct sunlight, and so he says, what I gather from the threads, that it appears this issue is not uncommon, and the only solution seems to be getting your Kindle replaced. Not all Kindles are affected, and it seems to be the result of several minutes of direct sunlight. I have not noticed my Kindle being affected as of yet, but I don't do much reading in direct sunlight. So this is another kind of nagging problem that's out there, and I know, you know, when I'm at the beach in Maine later this summer, I'm going to be wanting to read in some direct sunlight, and I certainly hope that my screen doesn't turn out to be one of the ones that has this problem. Another nagging problem that won't go away is the times that listeners are finding the $9.99 price point for bestsellers and new releases not being held to by certain volumes. Billy Bogart sent me a terrific exchange of emails that she's had with Amazon on this topic, and cites a specific book, Lee Child's Gone Tomorrow, for which the Kindle and the hardback edition were exactly the same price, $14.85. So she writes, this is nuts and I do not get it. You know, in her comment, what you see is someone that was a, you know, huge unalloyed fan of the Kindle and glad to spread the word to other people, really feeling, I guess, sort of betrayed about this. And the response from Amazon, I think, is, as usual, responsive. One of the people that she wrote to said, please understand that the price you pay in the Kindle store is based on this initial publisher price. We're working hard to build a successful digital store and make every effort to provide you with the best price possible. Sorry about this, et cetera, et cetera. She didn't bother to call him back because she just feels like it's frustrating, and you know, she says, I'll read part of her comment toward the end. She writes, these were not issues for the first year or so because the Kindle was an experiment and everyone knew that, but now the Kindle is entering into a more mature product stage and the long-term considerations become more of an issue. None of us know how much Amazon invested in developing the Kindle product line, but it seems like they should be well on the way to recouping all of their upfront costs, and Kindle is moving into the cash cow phase. I really appreciate the tip about Zoolert. That's Zoolert.com, a place where you can track Kindle books to send alerts when the price falls to a certain level. Billy writes, at the time you discussed it, I thought I would not need it. Amazingly naive with me. So, you know, I really understand this frustration. I felt the same thing. I've got a book that I still haven't bought yet because it's not $9.99 Power Rules. And the first time that happened on a book I really wanted, it just, you know, it was sort of a sinking feeling. And why can't, I guess my question is, why make that promise if it can't be fulfilled? And one answer is, this week it came out in several news reports that Jeff Bezos, in talking about the Kindle's experience and the effect on Amazon, stated that the Kindle is not making a profit yet, despite the terrific sales, so that, you know, they're in the investment phase of building market share and getting the device established and all of that. So I think there's just obviously going to be a real tug of war between the publishers and Kindle. and Amazon as to what the Kindle price is going to be. And in the process, we're probably not going to have as simple a pricing set up as we hoped and were sort of led to believe at the start of this thing. But I guess I'm hopeful that when it all shakes out, the logical pricing for Kindle is going to be very desirable compared to what we're paying for paper books. But this is going to be a continuing issue that unfolds, I'm sure. Clark Diamond writes, I'd like to be put in touch with the guy who was talking about Amazon's callous selection of reviews, reader inaccessible bargain texts, and PD, that's public domain. I left my great-grandfather's clock on tonight. I love the sound of that. I wonder what my great-grandfather in Lewiston, Maine would have thought about reading on a Kindle. I think he was a fairly progressive guy. He was a mayor of Lewiston, Maine, and I like to think he probably would have jumped on it because I think he was a big reader. Back to Clark. He's talking about textual accuracy. He's interested in that, and so I put him in touch with Dan Barnett, who sent in an audio comment asking if there might be a way for people to do a clearinghouse on issues in certain texts that people might want to flag to each other. Clark ends by saying, I live near Gardner, northwest of Walsenburg. This is in Colorado, out of range of WhisperNet, yet I have found that Wi-Fi fills my need for portability in a bookshelf, previously unfilled in a lifetime of toting books, reducing somewhat the compulsion to visit Tattered Cover and Twist and Shout. And that's is that all our comments? Yep, that's the last of the comments. If you would like to make a comment, you can leave an audio comment, and I love getting audio comments. The way you do that is call 206-666-2713, and it's just a phone message system where you can leave a message and re-record it if you want to, you know, take a couple of shots at getting it the way you want it. You can also email me at podchronicles@gmail.com, or you can leave a comment on the show notes page at thekindlechronicles.com. If you'd like to be included in the Kindled Spirits email alert list, please drop me an email at podchronicles@gmail.com. I use this to send out alerts, for instance, when news first came across about the new highlighting notes capability. I sent out the link and the information to everyone on that list. What was that, maybe back on Tuesday? So the people on that list do sometimes get information sooner than I'm able to put it in the Friday podcast. And I've also sometimes, when I've had interviews, sent a request for questions out to this list. And I think I've got about 100 people on it, so it's a good strong list of people who are following the show a little more closely by being on that list. So if you'd like to be on it, just fire me an email at podchronicles@gmail.com and I'll add you on the list. I'm working on an interview next week with Marion Maniker, who writes about business for Slate's The Big Money and has done some insightful commentary about the Kindle based on his experience as publisher of HarperCollins' business books imprint. We've connected on email, and he said he'd like to do the interview, but so far we haven't been able to set up a time and a date for it. Music for my podcast is Ramonk by Eval Monagat on the Variations in Time, a Jazz Perspective CD by Public Transit Recording, courtesy of IODA PromoNet. This is Len Edgerly from downtown Denver for the Kindle Chronicles, reminding you to read different. I really appreciate your taking the time to listen to my podcast. Have a great day. Bye.